sang out a tune, would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing.
He couldn't sing in tune if you paid him a million, but the sentiment's right. You keep well with a little help from your friends. And Professor Alex Haslam, formerly of the Australian National University in Canberra and Macquarie University, has studied this in a range of situations, including how to improve your memory by a massive 10%.
I think the point is that groups are a very neglected dimension of health and well-being. We tend to think about health at an individual level and say we've got to nurture the individual and we've got to give them drugs and so on. And actually our research is saying, well, actually group life and feeling part of a community has enormous impact on our well-being, and we neglect groups at our peril. And our research, the stuff that we laid out and there's a range of it, shows actually the very significant, palpable, tangible benefits that come from having an active group life and promoting that through a range of activities and interventions.
In fact, what's the evidence for that there is an overall improvement of significant amounts?
We've got a range of measures in different studies that we use. Some of them are just standardized measures of life satisfaction and well-being that are used by scientists in various walks of life. We have measures of clinical depression, which are standardized measures. But I think interestingly too, we have measures of cognitive performance, and these are measures by neuropsychologists, which are the standard measures you'd use in a medical setting. So they're, if you like, they're the state-of-the-art kind of measures of all of these states. And typically, in our intervention studies, we get improvements where we attend to group life of about 10 to 15%, which is pretty significant. And if I was to say to you, for example, in the case of some of our work, I've got a drug which is going to improve your memory by 10%, people would invest a lot of money in developing that drug, they'd pay a lot of money for it, and the fact of the matter is we have that drug and the drug is us, it's our community, and we need to get out there and build it and work with it and not rely on other people to develop solutions in laboratories. We are the laboratory and we have to be there at the coalface providing the solutions.
And in fact, the way that was achieved is something remarkably straightforward: reminiscing in groups, talking about the old days, and also playing Skittles. So in other words, a group game had that effect. Now that's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, I think at one level it's extraordinary, but again, people feel happy in groups, they feel good in groups, they engage in groups, and it's surprising in a way that we haven't really understood that. And I think part of the issue is it doesn't fit with our model of medicine as a one-on-one kind of activity. But yeah, you're right, at one level it's saying it's very simple, but actually collecting the data to support it is quite a difficult endeavour, so it has taken us quite a while to accumulate the evidence, but I think it's incredibly powerful. I think it's actually a very positive message for society, for medicine, and for the health of us as a whole, as an entirety. And I think, again, the message is the cure is here, it's here now, and we are the cure, you know, and I think that's an incredibly powerful message.
How does it specifically relate to things like strokes and recovery?
Well, actually, studies, there's again now around the world, I think a classic study by Bernadette Bernal-Albala in Columbia, the States, she looked at 600 plus stroke victims, followed them over a period of 5 years, and looked at what were the factors that determined whether or not they had a re-incidence of stroke or heart attack or indeed death. Traditional medical factors like lack of exercise, diet, history of coronary artery disease, they predicted that they were responsible for about a 10 to 30% increase in risk, okay, which is significant. So those factors all play a role. But the really big factor was social isolation. And actually, the real killer out there is people who are neglected and don't feel part of a community. And again, actually, that particular population of stroke sufferers is one that's been examined extensively. We've also done some research ourselves with stroke sufferers, and again, found that the best predictor of being able to recover from a stroke is belonging to multiple groups before you had the stroke and being able to maintain membership of those groups after the stroke. And that, again, trumps all other predictors of those outcomes. So again, if you're at risk, maintain those group memberships and help those people at risk maintain group memberships. Come back to this point, we are the cure.
I was most impressed, one of the people in your group was talking about the position of a family. It reminded me, in fact, it's not a social definition where you say, I am middle class, you know, I'm reminded of the sketch with the two Ronnies and John Cleese. I am upper class and I'm just a working class. But what they're doing is looking at a ladder and looking at your social status as you define it yourself, the higher you are, the greater your well-being in terms of health. And that reminded me incredibly of Sir Michael Marmot's Whitehall study about power in the bureaucracy. The higher you are, the better your health readings in all respects.
Yep.
Remarkable, isn't it?
I think it is remarkable, yeah. And again, I think our standing as individuals, our standings of groups matter to us. You know, actually, just as a trivial example, if you go and look at rugby league table, I mean, you know, in the days when the Canberra Raiders were top of the table, you know, that made everybody in Canberra feel good about being there. And when you're cellar dwellers or whatever, you don't feel quite so good. There's not so much to celebrate. I don't think it's hard to extrapolate from that to other kinds of real consequences for well-being, feeling good, having a community, getting out and enjoying each other's company. You know, that resonates, I think, with things we already know. What I think the point is that understanding has not been translated into scientific understanding or indeed solutions to various kinds of problems. And I think those are the gaps that the work that we're doing here in the UK, but in particular work in Australia at ANU still and at University of Queensland, I think that work's incredibly important. I think it's chronically underfunded. I think people have a real confidence in things like neuroscience being able to and medicine being able to deliver magic pills. They may be able to do something, it's a long way off, it's going to be a lot of money. We're saying invest in other things, invest in the present and invest in what we have, because it's real, it's tangible, and the benefits are there to be enjoyed by all.
One wonders finally how you do that in investment in urban design, architecture, the way you design things. You know, the last thing you would do is have a kind of estate like on the bill, or the kind of work structure that isolates people, as Carrie Cooper's desire.
Yep.
And on the other hand, you could actually have physical circumstances that bring people together. I'm reminded to some extent of the duck pond in the hospital in between the kids' ward and the geriatric ward, where the two groups could mix.
Yeah, it's funny to say that. Some of our other research is precisely on the management of space. For you, not only if you create space for groups, but you involve groups in the creation of space, you find they're much more likely to use that space and to build a sense of community, a sense of shared identity. And that translates into not only use of the space, but well-being and measures of cognitive engagement. And actually, one of our other studies that's about to be published is on precisely that point. And again, architects, designers often put the group at the end of the equation. Oh, well, I'm going to create a beautiful building, and at the end of the day, the people have to live there. Well, they have to make sense of it. I think you need to put groups, you need to put these things at the beginning of the design process. And I think the evidence is that, and particularly, I think when you're working with vulnerable populations, as in care homes, the tendency, I think, with those populations is to say, we know best, we know what you want. Actually, we were able to show in these care homes, if you involve residents in the design of communal space, they feel better about it, identify with the staff, they identify with each other, they use the space, and they live longer. It's a simple, you know, it's these things really matter.
Alex Haslam is Professor of Social Psychology at the University of Exeter, having done his PhD at Macquarie University and then 10 years at the ANU in Canberra.